This is Glenn Hauser with World of Radio 1418. World of Radio is a listener-supported public service program about communications around the world, above all shortwave. On this edition, recorded July 22nd, WRNO back on the air. Alaska DRM license granted, and other FCC news. Update on Mexican shortwave and St. Helena QSLs. No more shortwave from Denmark. Damascus Listeners Club, sorting out Pakistan's schedule and the propagation outlook. If you're listening to a station which cut off our opening, I repeat, this is World of Radio 1418. Big news this week is the return at last to the shortwave airwaves of WRNO in New Orleans. It pays to band scan frequently. I ran across a signal on their registered frequency 15590 Friday, July 18th at 1938 UT, open carrier and then some tone testing, several interruptions, and then it went off at 1950. Actually, it was slightly off frequency. I measured about 15590.4. Although no IDs were heard, this was soon confirmed as WRNO by their longtime consulting engineer, George Jacobs. I told him about it, and he says, after 7 years, I'm happy to confirm that WRNO is back on the air, running transmitter through its final adjustments and tuning. During the following week, the required testing should be completed, and FCC Form 310 filed. Regular programming planned to begin on August 1st. They plan to use 7505 at night and 15590 in the daytime, but they may have a very limited schedule for a while. This was also confirmed by Dan Brown in Boston, who wrote that article about WRNO last year for Monitoring Times with the illustrations he took at the transmitter site. He phoned headquarters in Fort Worth, and Janet Maywire confirmed that they had been performing preliminary transmitter tests, and they hope to have audio by the end of the following week. No doubt, and a lot of longtime shortwave listeners will remember WRNO, the Rock of New Orleans, and the first shortwave affiliate for World of Radio some 25 years ago, but this is the new WRNO under new ownership, and it's to be another religious station. Actually, the very next day, July 19th, Dan Brown heard them with some modulation other than tones, a preacher extolling the virtues of the new medium he has access to. That was at 1620 to 1640 UT. So far, it appears their tests have been only for a few minutes at a time. As a matter of fact, I've yet to hear them again since my first logging on July 18th, but if you sit on 15590 or 7505, you're bound to hear them sooner or later. As several others have subsequently, including on 7505 Scott Barber in New Hampshire, July 19th around 2300, same time by Thomas Jella in Florida, as well as Raul Saavedra in Costa Rica. Dan Brown, who visited the site last year, says it's the same old transmitter building, but now with a new Elcor 50-kilowatt rig, an old-style plate-modulated Class C, not PDM or high efficiency. And it's a repaired TCI log periodic antenna, which is only 100 feet or so from a subdivision, so there's some concerns that they might have some interference problems. According to FCC registrations for the current season, here is the total authorized schedule of WRNO, but again, they'll probably not be using the entire schedule at the outset. But they could be on anywhere from 14 to 01 UT on 15590, from 22 to 16 on 7505. There's an overlap there, of course, since they only have one transmitter. Another frequency has been registered, but apparently not going to be used immediately, 7355. Between 22 and 04. Music used for some of the tests has ranged from country and western to Latin music to classical. This reminds Kai Ludwig in Germany of a broadcaster on the former WRNO, the notorious neo-Nazi Ernst Zundel. He says in February of 2007, he was sentenced to 5 years in prison for incitement of the people back in Germany. The detention while awaiting trial will be taken into account, so a possible early discharge could take place soon. More about the situation at the Voice of America. First, from AFGE Local 1812's website, who it's fair to say are slightly biased toward the workers at VOA rather than the management. An item dated July 9th says VOA employees, sickened by the continuing bad decisions made by the Broadcasting Board of Governors, demand that the BBG take funding from the wasteful and ineffective Al Hurra and the Radio Sawa in order to keep valuable VOA radio services on the air and reestablish the VOA Arabic service. BBG claims to have an agreement with Congress to eliminate by September 30th radio broadcasts of VOA Ukrainian, Serbian, Bosnian, Georgian, Hindi, and Macedonian, and eliminate almost half of Portuguese to Africa radio and the radio broadcasts of the Russian service as well as television. They say BBG has squandered thousands, if not megadollars, on ghost employees at Al Hurra, but now wants to throw U.S. citizens performing a valuable service at the Voice of America out of work. And a few days earlier, July 3rd, AFGE published this. VOA director Dan Austin, accompanied by an entourage, visited various language services on July 1st and 2nd to announce a series of sharp cuts that had been fully restored under the fiscal 2008 budget passed by Congress and signed by acting President Bush. Despite the will of Congress to reverse the BBG's proposed cuts, the BBG, through Austin's tour of doom 2008, said the Georgian service will be shut down, all broadcasting eliminated in Ukrainian, Serbian, Hindi, Macedonian, and Bosnian. What can you do to stop this systematic destruction of the Voice of America? Contact your representative and senators and let them know the value and worth to the American taxpayer of these vital, effective, and relatively inexpensive tools of U.S. public diplomacy, and that these services remain in serious jeopardy. KimAndrewElliott.com reports that Representative Ileana Ros-Lehtinen, Republican of Florida, is set to introduce a bill to reorganize the Broadcasting Board of Governors. It would begin to negotiate licenses with American cable TV systems to broadcast its programs in the United States. This is reported in InsideDefense.com. Kim says consolidating overlapping bureaucracies makes sense, but little else in this strange story. Ros-Lehtinen thinks that U.S. international broadcasting should be for the purpose of advocating administration policies, and she scoffs at the notion of providing straight news that is the reason most people tune to international broadcasts. Meanwhile, as various VOA language services are being eliminated, or so it seems, rival Radio Free Asia is installing new equipment at its separate studios. Kim says this situation screams for a merger. Several mornings from July 17th to 21st at various times between 12 and 1330 UT, I've heard some sweep tone tests on 9500. There are three constant pitch tones and then a sweep going from low to high, something like AM stations are occasionally heard using testing out their modulation range. This is on shortwave 9500. Never heard any IDs, but a pretty good signal, so it may be from North America. But we can't be positive it's a broadcast station or a non-broadcast station. Does anyone have any idea what this could be? Ben Cobb of www.26mhz.us tells DX Listening Digest that on July 15th, the FCC issued an experimental radio service license to Digital Aurora Radio Technologies, DART, of Delta Junction, Alaska, with call sign WE2XRH. The aim is to determine the impact of high-latitude HF propagation of digital audio modulation using the DRM system to determine the transmission power levels required for adequate signal for high reliability throughout Alaska and other things. Frequency range authorized are 7.1 to 7.6 megahertz with 0.66 megawatts ERP at 9.25 to 9.95 megahertz with 0.11 megawatts ERP. Also 1.09 megawatts from 4.4 to 5.1 megahertz. In fact, two different transmitters around those frequencies. The president of DART is Whit Hicks, Ph.D., executive director of Delta Mine Training Center, a nonprofit organization offering educational programs in mining and mineral exploration. The license expires in 2 years on July 15, 2010. There have been several stories about this in the trade press, including NextGov, Technology in the Business of Government website, which interviewed Ben Cobb. But that was skewed toward the possible military aspects of DRM and the DART experiment. Harry Helms, who's a bit of a skeptic about all this, says, the story screamed, do some searches before you believe a word, and I did. The result is a strong smell of rotting fish. There is no website for Digital Aurora Radio Technologies. And with one exception, the only web pages returned are those carrying a variation of the story already referred to. However, Senator Ted Stevens of Alaska is no stranger to earmarks for his pet projects. And by remarkable coincidence, it turns out Delta Mine Training Center is another recipient of earmarks from the generous Senator Stevens, according to the OMB's official list of earmarks. In fact, it's 100% funded by Federal Contracts, a nonprofit tax-exempt organization. He says it seems clear that DART-DRM tests are nothing more than another example of Ted Stevens squandering federal money on behalf of his constituents. And since when did shortwave propagation of digital radio signals become a matter of interest to an NPO that supposedly exists to train people in the latest mining technologies? When millions of federal dollars are dumped in its lap, of course, your tax dollars at work. But wait, there's more from Binary Country. In IRCA, Bruce Portzer points out that according to its website, public radio station KDLG in Dillingham, Alaska, says it has gone HD, that is, its IBOC, on 670 kilohertz. And this led to an interesting discussion about how non-commercial radio in Alaska differs from that in the lower 48. You can read the thread in DX Listening Digest 8082 via worldofradio.org. Via the same issue, there's also a discussion of a station in Battle Creek, Michigan, which is still on the air 4 years after it was officially deleted by the FCC. Scott Feibusch started that out. The station is WOLY 1500. They've made all kinds of excuses, but the bottom line is they are operating without a valid license, yet the FCC has yet to move in and close them down. In WTFDA, Scott Feibusch mentions something else of interest. Expect to see more AM on FM translators in the months to come. There's a pending rulemaking at the FCC that would allow AM stations to put their programming on FM translators on a routine basis. With the expectation that this will be approved, FCC has already been approving such translator operation on a case-by-case basis under special temporary authority. For the last year or so, there are now several dozen of these around the country. And there is no really accurate list of all these right now. Here's something that's been in the works for a while but has now been approved. The downgrade of KGA 1510 in Spokane, Washington, from a clear channel station. Reported in the Spokesman Review via Lee Roberts. On July 20th, the FCC has approved KGA's nighttime power reduction, opening the way for the owner of that station and another one in the San Francisco area to cover the larger city much better. It's on the same frequency. KGA will reduce from 50 kilowatts at night to only 15 and change its directional pattern. That will allow KPIG 1510 in Piedmont, California, to boost power to 2,400 watts at night. KPIG would gain 1.8 mega listeners potentially in the Bay Area, while KGA would lose approximately 136,000 listeners in its primary service area at night, as well as those who can presently hear it up and down the West Coast. However, the change may not actually go into effect until after the upcoming basketball season. In AM switch of National Radio Club DX News, we learned that KYHN 1650 in Fort Smith, Arkansas, has applied for a silent special temporary authorization. Due to heavy spring rains, flooding of a nearby waterway placed the transmitter site, which is in Oklahoma, and the transmitter itself under several feet of water. And access to the site has only recently been allowed, but there appears to be a tremendous amount of damage. So they are deciding how best to proceed and request authority to remain silent for up to 1 year. Those mysterious medium wave tests from Chilocco, Oklahoma, I mentioned a few weeks ago, have been heard again by Richard Allen on 540 kilohertz, July 21st at 2109 UT until 2115. Other frequencies to check are 830 and 1680. Could be open carrier or with tones. That's something to do with the OSU Multispectral Laboratory in Ponca City. The media magazine you monitor with your mind, World of Radio, number 1418. Our address, P.O. Box 1684, ENID OK 73702 USA, or WORADIO at yahoo.com. Our thanks this week for financial support from David Cole in Oklahoma. I've tried most of the CBC Radio 1 summer shows, but one stands out as a new, entertaining, and informative production, rather than reruns or admittedly repackaged material. It's Revision Quest. I say this even though I am a member of the Last Nations. It airs Tuesdays at 11:30 a.m. local time across Canada, which means there are five different webcasts 1 hour apart between 14:30 and 18:30 UT, and it also airs Fridays at 23:30. Blurb on the website says, First Nations comic Daryl Dennis plunders the past to challenge misconceptions of what it means to be an Aboriginal person in Canada today. Kicks some assumptions for the listeners. The Native People's History of Canada has filtered through the eyes and funny bone of Daryl Dennis. As of July 20th and 21st, Julian Santiago Diaz de Bonilla in the Federal District updates us about some of the Mexican shortwave stations. He says that Radio Universidad, or UNAM, 9599.3, which has not been heard for several weeks now, lost its chief engineer, and his replacement has not been named. So don't expect shortwave to return before then, if ever. That's my paraphrase. And in San Luis Potosí, XEXQ 6045 says it is still on the air, even though even he has not been able to hear it. They still have issues with the location of their antenna. XERTA 4800 in Mexico City, according to Andres Cruz of the station, says they have a new studio address. The rent was too high at the previous one. It's now Gabriel Guerra, number 13, Colonia Zona Escolar Oriente, 07239, Mexico 75 DF. But the transmitter site is on the mountain called Pico de los Tres Padres, which is on the northern side of the federal district next to the state of Mexico. The leftist Ecuadorian government is cracking down on radio and TV stations it considers in the opposition. Licenses for six radio stations have been withdrawn, or rather not renewed, according to a story via Jose Miguel Romero. Among the stations named, we recognize two of them, which have been or are on shortwave, Radio Luz y Vida on 4850, although it's been inactive, and El Buen Pastor on 4815. There's a lot more background about the politics behind this in DX Listening Digest 8083 via worldofradio.org. Last week I mentioned that the Brazilian on that new out-of-band frequency 5870, Radio Voz Missionaria in Florianópolis, had not been reported from outside South America, and I still see no reports from North America, but here's one from New Zealand. Brian Clark says, I've been hearing it from Fade In at 0200, past 0600 UT on July 19th. Running a call-in show and some contemporary Christian music across the top of the hour and some preaching as well. A comprehensive ID was heard at 0256 as Radio Missionaria and Voce Missionaria. Here's another report confirming that Radio Nacional Arcangel San Gabriel in Antarctica has been active again on 15476. We had a report from Europe last time. I've yet to see any recent reports of this from North America either, but in relatively close Uruguay, Moises Knelken reported to the Condish list that he heard it on July 17th. There was deep fading, however, but at times it was with a good signal, although the modulation was a bit low. He heard a multilingual ID at 19 UT, so don't be surprised if you hear not only Spanish, but German, Italian, or even Japanese, although most of the programming is actually announced in Spanish. It's unfortunate that a lot of DXers are still waiting for their QSLs from Radio St. Helena Day last year, or even previous reports sent to Radio St. Helena. Robert Kipp, who represents the project, has sent this notice around to DX lists, including NASWA and the one in New Zealand, who says Radio St. Helena informs all DXers that they have a pile of envelopes with QSLs just waiting to be posted. The latest delay is because the good ship RMS St. Helena, the only official mail carrier, is currently in dry dock in Cape Town, the home port, for repairs. So it's way behind schedule in delivering people cargo as well as mail. When it does sail again to St. Helena, she'll go straight back to Cape Town. Therefore, QSLs will not be posted until late August or early September. After that, they should be mailed by air from South Africa. Or it could mean that cards will not be sent until the RMS sails to Ascension Island, from which the QSLs would go to the UK and the rest of the world. They say that all the correct 2007 reports received here have been QSL'd. This does not mean that all the reports sent to Radio St. Helena also arrived there, unfortunately. Since Radio Denmark closed shortwave, there has been a shortwave transmitter in that country, originally known as World Music Radio, but lately used on occasion for some special broadcasts relaying pirates such as Radio Space Shuttle International. In shortwave bulletins, Stig Hartvig Nielsen, who I believe runs that station, says, I can tell you that the transmissions from Ilskov at Karup in Denmark on 5815 have come to an end due to illness. The absolute last broadcast from there was June 15th. I don't know yet if the transmitter will be relocated to another place in Denmark or sold abroad. Chris Lewis in England was surprised to hear the soundtrack of a Russian TV channel on shortwave. This was on 9795, July 16th, at 1955 in English. It was the audio of the TV transmission Russia Today. He says he's never heard that on shortwave before, and checking the schedules, that frequency is supposed to be the voice of Russia in Russian via Moscow site from 19 to 21 UT. But he matched the audio with the website streaming, including video at www.russiatoday.com, still going by 2020 UT. Chris Janssen tells us he's set up a Yahoo group for fans of Radio Damascus, Syria. It's the Radio Damascus Listeners Club. You can find it in the Yahoo groups by adding /radio_Damascus or www.radio-damascus-listeners-club.tk. As we reported some weeks ago, the abrupt and unexpected shift to daylight time in Pakistan on June 1st, UT plus 6, caused problems for the shortwave scheduling of Radio Pakistan. Initially, it seems all their programs were simply moved one UT hour earlier, but this led to some frequency collisions. However, Aslam Javaid in Lahore says on July 1st they made some further adjustments. Noel Green has also been monitoring this from the UK. Basically, what has happened is that some of the programs relayed from the home service are necessarily one UT hour earlier, but the transmission span containing them on shortwave may not be. Thus, the Urdu service to Western Europe is once again from 0830 until 11 UT. Now, there used to be 5 minutes of English news tacked on at 1100. That's on 17835 and 15100. The span for that transmission remains the same, but the English news for the duration of DST is still 1 hour earlier at 1000, and then they go back to Urdu for the rest of the hour. The other main English broadcast at 16 UT for 15 minutes is definitely still at 1500 on 11565 and 9385. As also confirmed by Eric Kuya in Denmark, there's a third frequency they may be on, but he could not hear, 15625. If you keep tuning around out of band, you'll probably run across Chinese Firedrake jamming on previously unused frequencies, which we can only assume are because the clandestine Sound of Hope has decided to use those frequencies, such as exactly 8,000 kilohertz, where I heard Firedrake July 16th at 1246 past 1300. Another new one was 9180 July 17th at 1317. However, on July 18th, I did not hear it on either frequency. Ron Howard in California reports a new frequency for Shokaze or Seabreeze via Japan for the broadcast at 14 to 1430 UT. They had been on 6020, but July 21st, in Japanese, they were on 6015, perhaps trying to escape jamming at least temporarily. Of course, 2 or 3 days a week, this transmission is in English. If you're hearing this before August 1st, a reminder that Radio Singapore International is about to close down its shortwave service. They plan a special program on their last day, July 31st, and have invited listeners to participate, as Jay Sachtevel reminds us from India. The transmission is at 11 to 14 UT on 6080 and 6150. Attention, those who are visually impaired. Peter Costello points out that there is a new in-browser screen reader, which is potentially revolutionary as a tool for the blind. Details at webanywhere, that's one word, .cs.washington.edu. Check the Nova Science Now website at PBS for a segment July 16th about space storms, including some great footage of auroras. The ARRL Propagation Bulletin refers us to the August issue of Scientific American for an article, Bracing for a Solar Superstorm. However remote that may seem at the moment, with one of the lowest solar flux index readings ever recorded on July 16th, as Tom Jella points out, of 64.2. The Propagation Outlook from Boulder, issued a week before I'm recording, July 15th, showed solar flux expected to be steady at only 66 through August 11th. ANK indices peaking at 15 and 4 on July 23rd, 20 and 5 on August 8th, but down to only 8 and 3 or 5 and 2 from July 24th through August 6th. The outlook from Prague issued July 18th, geomagnetic activity active to disturbed July 23rd and 24th, August 2nd, and 8th to 12th. Quiet on the 25th, 28th to 31st, August 1st, 3rd to 6th, and 13th, otherwise unsettled to active. Glenn Hauser concluding World of Radio, 1418.